This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to another episode of our Technical Competency Podcast. My name is Beth Ann Stuebe, and I'm the Director of Publications and Press for ILTA. And today I'm joined by Kenton Bryce, the Director of the Law Library, Director of Technology Innovation at the University of Oklahoma College of Law. Kenton, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
I'm really excited about this one, not only because we've had to hold you captive from this call to the next one, but this should be an interesting discussion. I'm really interested in how your university is adapting to technology. But before we hop into that, let's talk a little bit about you. Can you tell us something about yourself?
Yeah. So, I work here at University of Oklahoma College of Law. I live in Norman, Oklahoma, which, fun fact for everyone on the call, we are also home to the National Weather Center. And so we just had a big storm last night. It's June. And so I'm actually a weather nerd in my spare time. I pay attention to weather. I have lots of meteorology friends. And yeah, it was a fun night last night, just keeping track of hail size. And so, things I do in the spring, it's like our spring sport here. Beyond that, though, two kids, love them dearly, a five-year-old and a two-year-old, and they keep me busy beyond my normal job here at OU.
That's awesome. I assume that the kids weren't outside collecting hail, though.
They were fast asleep last night, which was great because we didn't have to wake them up and take them underground or anything last night. It wasn't that bad of a storm.
Well, thankfully, that got us to here and brings you probably to a less fun topic, but one that I'm really interested in, and so are a lot of our listeners. So let's talk about the ABA rule for competency. ABA rule 1.1 states that lawyers must provide competent representation. Competent being the word here. So let's talk about competency. I don't think it's just keeping abreast of the laws. There's a lot more to it. And let's talk specifically about what the University of Oklahoma College of Law is doing for this.
Sure. So obviously, my role, for the past 8 years, I've been running our digital initiative here at OU Law. And really that whole idea behind the digital initiative started in 2014 with how do we create more technology competent legal professionals? And so we took that 1.1, we looked at that Common 8, even before the state of Oklahoma had adopted Common 8 as their quote unquote Common 6. But that Common 8, the duty of technology competence, as it's been termed, that's been adopted by 40 states. We took a hard look at that back in 2014, actually before I even came here, and said, what are we going to do to get legal professionals just that much more competent with technology and law practice? And so we started the digital initiative. That's how we've been engaging with it. That's a non-curricular program, which is extracurricular. The way I like to talk about it is it's a CLE style program while you're in law school. All students are required to get 3 hours of training per academic year. So that means by the time you leave law school, in addition to your core curriculum, torts, contracts, evidence, you are required to get at least 9 hours of technology or innovation training before you leave. And that is for every single law student. So all 541 JD candidates have to do that. So it's not just one class where we only get like a self-selecting 15 to 20 students in a seminar or a certificate program. It's everyone. And because everybody needs to be technology competent and legal. So we've been doing that for a long time. And then I also teach 4-credit courses in technology and law practice for those self-selecting people that want to go further. But we also provide a host of other opportunities to engage with legal tech. I take people to conferences. I take people to tech show. I take people to Clio. Even our own solo small firm is like a miniature technology conference for lawyers. And I take students to that as well. So it's pretty comprehensive here how we've been trying to engage this question of how we develop competency. That's what we've been doing. There's plenty of examples around the country of what others are doing. But it is a major issue. We should be, as a law school, finding ways to train our students or teach our students about how to be more technology competent. I mean, it's 2023. Are we even having this conversation anymore, right? Like the why, I think the why is clear. The how and the what are the harder questions for law schools. I actually saw something, I think it was yesterday, on LinkedIn, and I get this a lot. Law schools aren't doing enough. And, what are law schools doing with ChatGPT or what are law schools doing with technology competence? And usually those questions are in the negative tone where it's like kind of sliding law schools. And I'm always pointing to those people. It's like, hey, how about you give up your for-profit career, come work for a law school and see how hard it is to change curriculum over time, and then come help us. But yeah, we are trying to do what we can with what we have. And that's basically the message that most law schools have.
I think you're preparing future generations, but I don't know that in 2014, when the conversation started for you all, that this conversation could have even been a thought pattern. Well, let's hop for a second. The idea of generative AI coming into common vernacular, you know, having my mom know what ChatGPT means, that's a little bit of a push past ABA Rule 1.1. There's no way that this could have been foreseen. And I don't think that there is a way for you or any firm to necessarily keep those students up to the very minute of practice. But how do you think technical competency will have to evolve to deal with something like generative AI?
That's a great question. And I love this question because actually we had a call yesterday with a few law librarians around the country on just legal research. What are we doing with legal research and ChatGPT or generative AI tools? And it was a really good call, about 20 people on the call. And I always come back to, what kind of competencies are we trying to build into people that are not necessarily tied to specific technology, right? And so don't get me wrong, generative AI and the promulgation of generative AI in the public sphere over the past 7 months has been incredible, right? You got an explosion of possibility because it became so much more accessible to people. You know, generative AI has been around since like 2017, really, right? And we have been talking about it here for a long time of, you know, what does AI mean for law practice as we keep on advancing? It's just everything accelerated incredibly over the past 7 months. And so, you know, I want to step back and say, okay, well, we know this technology exists. What competencies are we trying to build into our students to engage with that technology tool in a ethical as well as, I would say, business-friendly mindset? And so, and then how do we leverage those mindsets to implement those tools for the benefit of the legal profession? Those are harder questions than just, how do you use this, right? Or should you use it? It goes back to understanding how the tool works and kind of breaking it down and having that critical analysis, and then having some evaluative concept or evaluative metric that you can go through. It's like, well, I understand how it works, and now I can evaluate it so much so that I know that it should be good for me or not good for me to plug into my process. You know, I always talk about technology, as all others usually do, it's people, process, and technology. Technology does not exist in a vacuum. So when we talk about competence in technology, it's not just like knowing how to use styles in Microsoft Word. It is knowing how to use styles in Microsoft Word, but you have to know why that's important, right? And so with generative AI, this is the discussion we had yesterday. I fly my flag on competency. What are we trying to actually develop in our students? And then that's going to inform how we teach them. With generative AI, everybody's got the example right now of the poor attorney in the New York Southern District, right? And so, I mean, that's a very prescient issue right now. It's hot news. Everybody's waiting for the order from the sanctions hearing that happened last week. So I'm dating this podcast. Sorry, everybody that's listening. But I look at that and I say that's a general competence issue. That's not a technology competence issue. That is a legal research competence issue that involves technology. And so when we think about technology competence, it's understanding the why, but then going further and say, okay, should you shepherdize cases? Yes or no? And I'm going to use that vernacular, which is, how do you use a citator system to know if your cases are up to date? Well, you should use a technology tool for that. If you're doing that in the old print method, you're committing malpractice and you're overbilling your client. So for that attorney, should have been step one, right? And then knowing the technology that applies on that process is step two. Knowing that you should go through this process is step one. So we're trying to build in those competencies as well. And so it's not just about technology for technology's sake. It is about technology in context of legal practice. And then when we have a new technology, we're not just scared, right? We're not just overwhelmed with the possibilities of what this can do. We kind of understand our process and where this could plug in. And then we have to have realistic conversations about how that actually applies to the legal industry itself, because you know, I've seen all the stuff on LinkedIn. This is going to take everybody's job. And that's just not true, right? That hype is up there. Was it like 22% of all legal administrative assistants are going to lose their jobs because ChatGPT can just take over? And it's like, well, maybe, maybe not. There are facets of processes that can be automated given this technology. We have to understand our process before we start adopting the technology. And so that's all, I mean, that's a really long answer, but when we talk about technology competency, it is all this wrapped into itself. And then there is specific competencies in technology, right? And so this is the work that we kind of been spearheading. I say we, there's a small team of us, law librarians. I gave a presentation last year at the American Association of Law Libraries that kind of kicked this off and more formally, but we've always been talking for a long time about defining technology. What do we mean? What do we mean when we say technology competency? What's the definition of it? No one has a definition. Or there's definitions behind paywalls. And I'm just going to leave that there. No more comments on that. But we're creating a system for hopefully open source definitions for technology competency using some kind of framework or to use some other people's terminology and ontology. We've been working with Sally on creating a working group within Sally to do this work. And so I get to go to ILTACON this year for the first time ever, and I'm hopefully building lots of relationships. If you're going to ILTACON and you're listening to this podcast, come find me. We want to talk about a across the legal ecosystem effort to actually define what we mean by legal technology for various stages of legal. So e-discovery, obviously, litigation, different stages of litigation, business use cases, contract lifecycle management systems, CRM management. What do we mean when lawyers need to be technology competent? Let's start defining that. So we're starting that work now because we got to come back to that question. What are we teaching? How are we teaching it? Well, we got to have some definitional frameworks before we can start really building out curriculum that can be basically scaled through most law schools.
I'd love to be on the text string, that group chat of the law librarians, just to see kind of how off kilter you guys get about technical competency. I bet that one's a hoot. You mentioned, and something that's very important to me, our publications, minus just one or two that are sort of member benefit based. If you take a survey, you get a copy of the survey, are open. I'm an ethical publisher. I believe very strongly that if, you know, a Creative Commons license doesn't just save you on one side or another of this kind of discussion about ethics. But I do think that there's an underlying question behind generative AI and ethics. But I think even more so, there's an ethics and honors code question for universities that need to be applied at a firm level. So let's talk a little bit about ethics and the honor code. This gentleman in New York, when I look at the problem, I don't look at it just as a technical competency. I look at it as an ethics issue as well. How do you believe that your universities are preparing students to deal with these ethical quandaries in technology that they may not fully understand, or that as an organization, you know, in legal technology, we don't necessarily understand the ethical ramifications of?
Yeah, great question. So as it relates to law school honor codes and what we're doing, we are, I mean, even this conversation we had yesterday, we're all over the map. Every law school's approaching this differently. There's really no guidance from the ABA accreditation system on how we should develop curriculum in this space. It really is up to every single law school. And then within that law school, unless there's a broad policy from the university or the law school, every individual faculty member of how they're leveraging this or how they're thinking through this. I'll say here at OU, I think about it a certain way. There's other faculty that disagree. Right. We do have faculty say you cannot even touch this in class. There are other faculty like myself who are like, let's expose the students and let's give some training for what's actually going on so they're more informed. And so I'll give you a quick example of how this worked out over the past 7 months. In February, after, you know, ChatGPT kind of gets its legs under it for about 2 months, I had a professor reach out to me and ask me to do kind of a one class kind of guerrilla takeover of her course on GPT technology. It's a seminar-based course. It was a paper-based course. The students had to write papers. And after giving like a 20 to 30 minute presentation on how it worked, right? Just going into the details of how this thing works, and then talking about ChatGPT, the paid for version, the plus version versus the free open version. And at this time, capacity was really limited, right? You may log in and you may not be able to do anything. Everybody remembers that from a few months ago. The students, not the faculty member. The faculty member actually drafted up a policy that I thought was pretty fair. The students came together and agreed not to use it. They were worried about hallucination. They were worried about fairness. And they were worried about equality in their own class. So we had 18 students that all agreed not to use it together because they were concerned that some people were going to be haves and some people were not going to be have-nots. They were really concerned about equality or equity among themselves in the class. I thought that was fascinating. And that goes more to the character of our students than any policy we could try to leverage. And so
they just drafted it for you.
Well, they didn't draft it. They agreed, right? They didn't draft a policy. It came to agreement among themselves. Now, but that's only after being exposed to it, understanding how it works, understanding limitations, understanding hallucinations, and understanding at that time in February, well, maybe somebody doesn't have $20 they could pay for the plus subscription, right? I mean, law school is still expensive. And our students are very concerned about every dollar that goes into their education, which I applaud.
Of course.
So we are not just a technology-oriented school. We're also a best value law school. So we're always having these conversations about student value. And so they're concerned about it. And so I was deeply impressed by our student body. And as future legal professionals and lawyers, what they're thinking through in their minds and how we've developed them. These are mostly third-year students. How we've developed them over the past 3 years to really think about fairness in the industry, equality and equity in the industry. And those people hopefully will be leaders going out, right? So when they're engaging with new technology, they're thinking through not just how it can benefit me, but how it affects everyone. And so I was really impressed with that. But that only was able to happen because I went in and actually told them how things work. I think that if they didn't have this conversation, if we didn't have some instruction, then it would have been more of the Wild West and students wouldn't have this collective mindset. So going forward, my hope is to expose our students to it, talk about how it works, talk about this is not like a true recent development. This has been going on for a while. It's just more public now. It's a little more capable than it was 6 months ago, and it'll be way more capable 6 months from now. And then how do we engage with this? You know, when I think about this, I don't know how much we actually have to change our honor code. I go back to, if we do, great, let's spell it out of what you can and can't do, but it's going to be a moving target for the foreseeable future, right? One person, no names, one faculty member had thought through this and said, well, let's just limit them not being able to use ChatGPT or the ilk or whatever. And I was like, that's going to get really hard when Microsoft launches Copilot. And the university allows that on our license, our E3 license. Like, that's going to get really difficult. How do you police that? So we have to change the policy again. I go back to ABA 2012 when they adopted Common 8. And when the committee was like, listen, we all agree this has always been part of your duty of competence. We're just actually putting it in writing. And that goes back to ChatGPT in the law school. We all agree that the honor code probably already encompasses plagiarism, cheating, acting like something that's yours is yours, but it's not, right? Somebody else wrote it. And we already have those frameworks in place. So I don't know if we need explicit rules because those are going to be shifting targets. And changing honor codes in law schools is it's an act of Congress. It takes a lot of work. Things move slowly. So I don't know if we actually have to update everything. Over time, maybe, but I mean, legal work is going to change, right? Education is going to have to adopt some of these changes, but at the end of the day, like, what are we actually trying to teach our students towards? We're trying to teach them about being lawyers, being leaders, no matter what the technology is. You know, 5 years ago, people were talking about blockchain is going to ruin title. You know, it's like, it's going to change everything with title. It didn't happen, right? And it still hasn't happened. And we're really a long way. I mean, I go back to that Gartner hype cycle, right? You go back to the Gartner hype cycle and it rings true with almost every technology, you know? Yeah, there'll become some time where we have a lot of hype and then we're going to get into that trough of disillusionment where it just doesn't do what we thought it would do until we figure out how to actually leverage it appropriately. I want to teach that to my students, no matter the technology, no matter what they're going to be engaging with. that our honor code would still say, you're a professional in this space, you're a leader in this space, and you must care for others and care for the profession. You're an officer of the court. Like, that's the oath we give when we get admitted to the bar. Yeah, I go back to that lawyer in the New York Southern District. I mean, if I ever get the chance, I'd love to sit down with them and talk about those things. Like, is there a competence question because of the technology, or a competence question because of legal research? Is there a competence question about maybe you're overworked? Maybe it's a wellness issue. Like, you're just trying to find the fastest way to do things. Well, we have a responsibility as a profession to start looking at that, right? Like, and I think law schools are taking a lead on that as well, of what we call cognitive overload for our students in school, where we can keep on teaching them, but they're not learning. We need to understand that. So we keep on pouring more stuff into this bucket. Here's ChatGPT. Here's your new honor code. And then they're like, I'm just trying to survive through contracts, right? And so how do I do that? Anyway, so yeah, I mean, it's a whole bucket. I don't know if we need to be just creating all these honor code revisions yet, because I think our honor codes already cover what we needed to cover.
And I think you've covered exactly what I would have asked about preparing the next generation of law students. You guys already seem to be doing it. So we'll leave it there, with the caveat that I get added to that group chat at some juncture.
Sure, sure. Come on.
Thank you so much, Kenton. And we will see you at ILTACON.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I am super excited to be at ILTACON. ILTA was gracious to give me the scholarship. I am pumped. I've always wanted to go. It's always the first week of school, so that's always weird timing for me. But yeah, I'm really excited to come this year and talk about these things to the profession. I want to hear from the profession as well. You know, law schools cannot be insular. I want to learn from everyone. You know, it's going to be a group effort. Law schools, legal professionals, retirees, everyone needs to be part of this conversation, no matter what phase of legal professional you are.
Kenton, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Beth Ann.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.